You're listening to an OTB AM podcast. You can watch the show or listen live every weekday morning from 7:45 AM. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream for more stuff just like this.
All right, as you can see behind us, we're at the Boar's Head here in Dublin. A happy memory here for many a GAA person down through the years, I'm sure. And as you can see, Eamon Fitzmaurice joins me. Eamon, how are things?
Good, thanks.
So 72 hours at this point, I think, since you stepped down as Kerry manager. What have those last 3 days been like?
They've been, I suppose, mad. I've been overwhelmed, really, by the amount of messages and text messages and phone calls I've got over the last couple of days from people from every walk of life, and, you know, thanking me and wishing me the best for the future. And on Sunday, the players themselves organised to go out to my home place in Lixnaw, and the whole lot of us went out, and all the players were there, and the management and the backroom team, and we had a great day out. And it would remind you of maybe a Wednesday or Thursday after winning in All-Ireland, even though we hadn't, that there was a great energy there and there was a great camaraderie. So I enjoyed that, and it was a good place to sign off for me, I suppose. And on Monday then, it was recovery mode and back to normality today.
I think Killian Young and Darren Sullivan both posted photos on Instagram, and I was trying to make out what pub in Clarny it was, but it was Lixnaw, you're telling me.
It was Lixnaw, yeah. I think that one that went out was the Dewdrop Inn. My brother-in-law actually runs it, and we were in Mike Quilters in the village as well, who'd be big supporters of the team always. So yeah, and it was something that came from the players. It was unprompted, and it was enjoyable. We had a great day out, and we had a good fun, and we had good chat about the memories we had as well.
Yeah, it's the best time to do it, really. Like, what was it like initially on Saturday night in Killarney when you told the players in the dressing room?
Yeah, there was a lot of emotion, I suppose, because, look, I knew this year was going to be my last year, come hell or high water. I was hoping that we'd be going out after winning the All-Ireland. I hadn't said that to anyone. The only one that really knew that was my wife, Tina. You know, it was coming to a natural conclusion, and both for myself and for the players, I felt it was time to move on. And you know, I just, after the game, I said I wasn't really going to have an opportunity to speak to the players again unless I brought them together specifically. So I felt it was the best time to say it, and it was the best place. It was probably a natural place to do it, and in a dressing room where we spend a lot of time together. So it was fine. I gave the lads the news, and that was it, and on we went.
At what point did you realise this year that it was going to be your last year?
I think maybe even this time last year I probably knew that, but when I spoke to Tim Murphy, the chairman at the time, after we had been beaten, that he was anxious maybe that I'd stay on for 3 years. I committed to that at the time, but we felt that we would review it after the year, and I felt that, you know, it would be a big ask for me to be there for 3 more years from everyone's perspective, from the players' perspective, from my own perspective. And so much goes into it that there is a shelf life in it. I think I had a realisation from early in the season, really, that to give it absolutely everything I had and to try and get as much as we could out of the season. But that, you know, I'd be happy to move on at the end of it then.
Yeah, because Tim Murphy kind of seemed shell-shocked afterwards, I think, from just, I wasn't in the press area myself, but according to a few of the journalists, that he didn't see it coming at all. So I guess you surprised everybody with the move on Saturday, but as you say, I guess you had to do it there and then because you had all the players and everybody there at that point.
That was it, and, you know, like I said, I hoped I was going to be giving Tim that news Thursday or Friday after winning in All-Ireland, and it would have been a different conversation. But I feel for Tim and for the county board and for the county even that it's a good move, that you know, it just removes someone who's been there a good while. It'll give Tim the opportunity to put his own person in there as well, because Tim came in having taken over from Patrick O'Sullivan, who had appointed me. So that's good for Tim as well. He's another 3 years to go in his term. He's a great man, he's a great leader of the county board, and I think it's good for him to get his own person in there and at the same time have a bit of time to try and get it over the line as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We may as well get straight into it. The comments after the game, which I think everybody's been talking about over the last 48 hours, is the anonymous letters. It's extraordinary. I don't think anybody saw the vitriol reaching this level, to be honest. We thought it was, first of all, we thought people only wrote letters in the 1970s. That they're still writing them in the year 2018 is remarkable, but also that individual abuse would be targeted in such a way.
Yeah, well, I think the letters thing has taken on a life of its own. I think it's important to clarify where the comment came from. Since I've taken over, I've got a collection of letters, so this is nothing new for me. This is happening going right back to 2013. And I've never mentioned this, I'd say, to anyone. I certainly haven't mentioned it in public before because it's not something I take any notice of, really. I remember even a couple of weeks or a couple of months into the job, when I got the job in 2013, we started getting anonymous text messages that time about how badly we were going. And Patrick O'Sullivan was the chairman at the time. He was getting them. Darrow O'Shea was the trainer of the under-21s. He was getting them.
Was it from the same number?
Yeah, all from the same number, and I was getting them. So we had a bit of a laugh about it at the time. I remember being on the bus up to one of the early league games. We lost four league games in a row to start to my term, and this person was telling me I was the worst Kerry manager of all time, and this was maybe 2 months into my term, so the only way was up after that. But we didn't, you know, I haven't ever taken any notice of that stuff because, as I said, it goes with the territory. Jack O'Connor got it, Pat O'Shea got it, Paddy got it, Mick O'Dwyer won 8 All-Irelands and he got it. So, you know, it's not something that I was ever precious about, but something that changed this summer was players, and one player in particular that got a letter. And it was more what was in the letter that was what annoyed me, and I felt it was gone too far. That the player was told in the letter to jump off a cliff and take 3 or 4 other players with him that were named in the letter. And I felt that that was, you know, going way too far. And as I said, when it's coming at a manager, and the selectors got a few this summer as well, which was no harm for them either to get a touch of it. But when it goes to a player, really, it's gone too far. And the lads are amateurs, and they give. I've been in the dressing room with a lot of those lads for 6 years, some of the younger lads for 2 or 3 years, and they're as good a bunch as you can meet. They're so dedicated and they're so committed to the Kerry jersey, it's unbelievable, and they're a fantastic bunch to work with. So I'd always defend them to the hilt, and I didn't like that, and I think that's gone too far, really.
Like, you obviously, you don't need to name the player here, but at what point of the year does this come in? Like, is it again kind of early in the league? Is it sort
no,
of
no, it was during the summer, it was recently.
And it's obviously an extraordinary thing for anybody to put pen and paper to tell somebody to jump off a cliff. Like, how does the player react to that? I mean, like, there's
no, and to be fair, I didn't tell that player that I was going to discuss this or anything, and I wouldn't like to name him. Same fella. It was, to be fair to him, it was water off a duck's back, and it genuinely was, because sometimes in those kind of situations, particularly in that kind of a competitive environment, you can be, you know, fellas can maybe project a certain thing, but they might be feeling something deep down. But this fella didn't. It did knock a stir out of him, it didn't bother him, but I thought it was poor form, to be honest about it.
Well, that's the thing, like, you're talking about projection there, you could perhaps, if you're going to sit down and write a letter, you might say, well, that fella's not going to feel it at all, he looks like a peacock walking around the pitch with his chest out, but you never know what a person is really like, what criticism they could really take to heart, and that's not criticism, that's hate mail.
It is, and in fairness, I think that you know, with regard to the letters I've got myself and the anonymous letters, I wouldn't go so far as to call them hate mail. You know, there has been some of them that have been fairly vitriolic, but a lot of them, no, they wouldn't. They'd be more in the harmless variety of things, to be fair. They are anonymous letters and you wouldn't take any notice of them, but that would cross the line, definitely, that one that got the player. And, you know, like I said, that's probably where that came from on Saturday night. I hadn't planned to say that,
sure.
but it came out, and I know it's taken on a bit of a life of its own since. you know, from the management perspective, as I said, I'd say there isn't a manager in the country that doesn't get some kind of a letter at some stage, and that's even club managers. So as a Kerry manager, you're not going to be precious about that. But no, I think it's definitely time to shout stop when players are getting very strongly worded letters like that.
Definitely. It's interesting that you've kept all that mail.
It is, isn't it? A psychologist would probably have fun with that. Yeah, I'll probably have some kind of a burning session or something at some stage. But yeah, like I said, some of them were on the nasty side of things, but some of them as well, you know, there would be suggestions about what we should do with the team and so on. And some of those.
Did you implement those suggestions?
No, not too many, to be honest, not too many.
It strikes me that you either A, have to have a very thick skin being Kerry manager, or B, build one up. Which column do you fall under?
No, I think I had it from being a player. You know, as a player, we had great days, but we had tough days as well. And in particular, 2001, 2 and 3, we underperformed in big games. And as a group, we weren't fulfilling our potential at all. So we definitely developed a thick skin that time. And after that, again, thankfully, we were successful. But no, when you've played for Kerry, as long as I played for Kerry, and you go through the ups and downs, you develop that. And I think that's just my personality. It's not... It is the way I am. And, you know, I knew going into the job, I had worked with Jack for 2 years as a selector, so I'd had a good taste of it. And you have to be ready for that. And there's no point expecting that it won't come, because it will come when there's a bit of turbulence.
Yeah, like, it's an interesting dynamic. It's been talked about for years and years, the dynamic between Kerry players and the supporters, Kerry management and the supporters. Like, do you feel you went on a journey with the Kerry supporters during this managerial stint, that it was going very well, obviously 2014? Like, at what point does it start to deteriorate a little bit, where we get to the point now where it's very well kind of discussed that there is not a happy relationship between maybe your management team and the Kerry supporters?
Yeah, no, I think with the Kerry supporters, and it's very important to say this at the outset, there's a genuine cohort there, and they're absolutely unbelievable, and they've supported us through thick and thin, they've supported me through thick and thin. I've had a load of goodwill over the last couple of days, as I've said, and going into the championship this summer, you'll be meeting people. They're always very positive. Last year, after the disappointing Mayo game, there was a lot of disappointment in Kerry, but there was also a lot of positivity, and people were certainly very positive with me. So I think that can be overplayed sometimes, that there is a very genuine cohort that everyone's kind of tarnished with the same brush. But of course, then there is a cohort that are hard to satisfy, and again, that's part of the thing, and it's there. But the thing I would say in relation to the Kerry supporters is that I think in Kerry we've more followers than supporters, that we've the cohort that support the team, that go to all the games, that are there through thick and thin, but then we've a lot of followers as well. And I think the best way to explain it is that I'm a Man United fan myself. I've been since I was a kid, maybe not as passionate or as involved as I would have been when I was younger. Certainly since Alex Ferguson has left, probably not as much, you know, I wouldn't have the same level of interest. But I would call myself a follower, in that I would know, or I would have known everything that was going on, and, you know, you'd follow what was happening and the different rumours and the matches and whatever. But I wouldn't have classified myself as a supporter, because I wasn't going to games. I wasn't, maybe once a year I'd get to Old Trafford or whatever. And I think it's the same in Kerry, that we've an awful lot of people, they're absolutely fanatical about the game, and they know everything about the team and what's going on, and they watch the games, but a lot of the games they watch it on TV. I don't think they actually go to games. So I would say there's a difference between the supporters and followers, because to me, if you're supporting the team, you go to matches and you support them through thick and thin. And I think it's even an issue at club level, that, you know, I'd be going around to a lot of club games and the crowds are small. You know, there aren't a lot of people don't go out and they don't support their club teams. If there's a county championship weekend on and there's two or three games on that I'd get to, it's a lot of the same faces that you see in the different places, you know. So I think, as I said, there's a massive genuine bunch of supporters there, but a lot of people in Kerry are followers rather than supporters.
Why is that?
I don't know. I'm not sure if it's a societal thing, and is it maybe the way the game has gone? Is it people don't, maybe there's a bit of negativity about around it? Is it entertaining enough? You know, even when we played Monaghan and Clonus this summer in the Super 8s, there was a big crowd there, but it wasn't sold out. Mm. And I would feel that if you're above in Clonus and one of the heartlands of the GAA, Monaghan are playing to get into an All-Ireland semi-final, Kerry are coming up playing for their lives, you'd nearly expect it to be sold out, to be honest. Similarly, in Killarney last weekend, I think there were 17 or 18,000 people. Again, it's an All-Ireland quarter-final in Killarney. And the way things worked out, it didn't work out for us, but you'd nearly expect it to be sold out. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure what it is, but it's possibly a worry. Is it cost? Is it interest? Is it apathy? I'm not sure.
Did they expect too much?
No, I don't think they do. I think that's part of what makes Kerry what it is, that there is expectancy there every year, and I'd have never hid from that expectancy because we expect the same thing ourselves within the group. With the effort that we'd put in and with the players we have and with the way we try to do everything right, we expect to win the All-Ireland every year. Otherwise, there isn't much point going at it. So, no, I don't think so. I think that's healthy.
Yeah. Just a couple of other things on the Kerry supporters and kind of your relationship with them. Because you'll have seen it all. You mentioned your playing days there and how Jack got it and Nico got it. Everybody got it. Paulie obviously famously spoke about it as well. Do you kind of analyse how you're perceived from the Kerry fans as opposed to, say, Jack and Paddy? Then do you think you got a worse time than previous Kerry managers?
No, I don't. I don't, to be honest, because I think you shut yourself away from it for the most part because you've a job to do, and you know, no matter what you do, even when you win in All Ireland, there's going to be things about that All-Ireland that weren't quite right. It wasn't the perfect All-Ireland. So there's always, you know, there's always going to be debate. And that's part of sport. That's in every sport. And that goes with the territory. So no, I'd never measure myself against how the other lads went on. It would be an interesting conversation if we all came together. All right, Jack.
We should make that happen, actually. Yeah. Power rankings, the hate that Kerry managers get sometimes. You mentioned getting criticism after winning an All-Ireland. And I was just kind of thinking about it, just about some of the incredible matches that Kerry have been involved in under your tenure. And I wouldn't like to have seen some of the vitriol being written if Kerry had lost the 2014 All-Ireland, because I presume you get criticised for the way Kerry set up that day, but it led to winning an All-Ireland. And conversely, if you look at some of the things you've got criticised for and you've spoken openly about it yourself, say the 2016 All-Ireland semi-final against Dublin and the Paul Gainey off for Mark O'Shea decision, which you've spoken about as well in the past. It must make you think, God, I'm lucky I won the 2014 All-Ireland. That criticism could have got very, very bad and it could have happened a lot sooner.
Yeah, I suppose the only positive side is that I probably wouldn't have been there for 6 years then, you know. But no, I think you don't. You can't think about that. Sure. What we do and what I've always done, and it was one of the things I would have been very strong on going into the job, is that I was going to be my own man. I was going to do it my way. And the mistakes that I've made, and I have made them, have been my mistakes. There haven't been someone else's mistakes where I've been listening to someone on the street or reading something in the paper and saying, do you know what, that's a great point, I'll do that. And the next thing it goes pear-shaped, then you're kind of saying, why did I do that? So no, I was very definite in my own mind going into the job that I was going to do it my way. We went a certain way for the All-Ireland final in 2014. We won. So it was fine. You mentioned the Paul Gainey substitution. It was something we discussed beforehand. If it came to play, would we do this? We did it. We didn't win. It was a very narrow loss. I think that day, that was the main talking point afterwards, rather than we brought a new press that we hadn't done before and Stephen Cluxton's kick out, who was obviously one of the best players ever in GAA history, certainly the best goalkeeper. And we'd success in that. That wasn't discussed at all. It was all about the Paul Gainey substitution. And I think that, and that's in sport as well. That's not just GAA. That it's always the person that isn't there is the solution to the problem. So, you know, and again, and I've said this, and I actually mentioned this to Tim Murphy after the game last Saturday night. There's one answer to all of it, and that's just win. And once you win, you know, you can be questioned, but you have the result to back up your theory.
Yeah, the psychology after the 2016 game is fascinating, because you mentioned there rumbling Stephen Cluxton twice before halftime famously. You never got a crack at Dublin again in the championship after that. Trying to push it into kind of a grim territory. Like, it must be frustrating that you didn't get that crack. Because even if you look at the league record after that, one win, one loss, one draw against the Dubs.
Yeah, it is. It is. There's no doubt about it. I think last year in the All-Ireland semi-final, the first day, the drawn game, we were a pint up. We had a free that could have been managed better. We turned it over. They went down the field, got the equaliser. We won the next kick-out, went up. Had a free to win it, didn't nail it, and missed out narrowly. And in fairness, we didn't play great either the first day in that All-Ireland semi-final, but we were very, very close to getting back into the final. In fairness, second day, we malfunctioned, didn't play well at all, and that was very disappointing. But it was disappointing not to get another cut at Dublin, because they are the standard at the moment, and you want to compete against them. And if you can beat them in Croke Park in a big day, you have a great chance of winning an All-Ireland, whether it's in a semi-final or a final. And it was one of the things that I certainly enjoyed, I'm sure the players did as well, that we did manage to beat them in a big game in the league final. And of course, it's only the league, and it was in Kerry, the league means very little. But to myself,
it meant a lot that day.
It did. To myself and to that group of players, it did. It was only the league, and even if it was only a regulation league game and it wasn't the league final, beating that Dublin team in Croke Park, it's a hard thing to do. And you know, we managed it that day, and we enjoyed that. I enjoyed that win. I personally enjoyed it. But unfortunately, we didn't build on it, and we didn't build on it in the meantime, and we just have to take that in the chin.
Yeah. Like, how much time went into studying the Dubs? Because, as you say there, like, Kerry want to win All-Irelands every year. Dublin were the standard bearers. They still are the standard bearers. Was there a lot of conversations going on and a lot of hours spent burning the midnight oil trying to figure out how to beat Jim Gavin's team?
I think early in my reign, I probably spent a lot of time, you know, watching them. I was at a lot of their games when we weren't involved ourselves. If we trained on a Saturday and they were playing on a Sunday, jumped in my car a good few times and came up to Dublin and watched them. So we played them a good bit, so we were very familiar with them. But as time went on then, I think, you know, they were always there in the distance, or they were always in the back of our minds, or the back of my mind certainly, but it was always about the next step and the next step and the next step. And if you can get to a point where you're playing Dublin and Croke Park and towards the end of the championship, it's where you want to be. But like you said, frustratingly, this season, last season, we didn't get there.
Yeah. Just on the decision-making process over the last few years, and obviously there's been a few different backroom teams involved with you down through the years as Kerry manager, was that a very collaborative experience? I know you've always put yourself to the forefront to take all the flack whenever it's there, you always said the buck stops at me, but to what extent was it a collaborative experience? Was there a lot of conversations about what we should do, or was it kind of your ideas and kind of rubbing it off the lads sort of thing?
No, I think it was very much a collaborative effort, and it has to be. Like you said, when you're the boss, the buck stops at you, and we'd all very much feed into everything we were doing. We'd have debates. We'd plenty of disagreements, plenty of arguments. I would be very open-minded, and I would be open to persuasion in certain directions. But at the end of the day, then, when a call has to be made, if we aren't unanimous, I'll make that call, and we all go with that then. And that's the way we've always operated. And I think it's the way you possibly have to operate, that there has to be someone making a call at the end. But no, it's very much been collaborative, and there's been plenty of good ideas from the other lads down the years as well. I've had good ideas, I've had bad ideas, the lads have had bad ideas, and that's the nature of management.
Who did you get into the most heated exchanges with?
Who's the most awkward one of the lads, so you're trying to ask? They all have their moments, to be honest. When you're looking at the fellas that I worked with, they all come across so nice. If I asked you now, I know who you'd pick. Who would you think would be the most awkward?
Well, it's hard to say, you know. I mean, after Mikey Sheehy had a cut at the Kerry fans earlier on this year, you'd probably have to say him.
Mikey knows his mind. Morris Fitz knows his mind. I thought you'd pick Liam Hassett there.
Because I forgot Liam, actually.
He certainly knows his mind. Dermot, Keane O'Neill, all of the lads that have been involved. And Padraig Corcoran would be very strong-willed as well. But that's the way a selector has to be. You don't want someone there who's just kind of sitting down and agreeing with everything you're saying. You need people that are going to disagree, debate. And what I found about disagreements is that if you have an idea yourself and the lads disagree with you, if you have to argue back as strongly to convince them, you're nearly convincing yourself more, if you know what I mean.
Okay,
you're trashing it out that bit more. So, no, I think it's very important and it's very healthy. And the big thing I had with my management team, and I think you possibly have to have it, is that when we came to a decision then, it was all of our decision and we all backed each other, and wrongly or rightly, we went together. So that was very much it. And I think working with the lads over the last number of years, it's been a privilege, and we've had massive times, and we've had massive fun and laughs along the way as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Keane O'Neill there. Like, he paid you a glowing tribute in Killarney on Saturday night. Obviously, Tomás O'Shea wrote a fairly stinging article of him earlier in the summer. There seemed to be a bit of needle from Gooch as well in the Sunday Game studio as well. Obviously, their pundits, they've got to tell it as it is, and it was probably just honest opinion of his job at Kildare that maybe they weren't achieving what they could achieve, as we saw, like they did against Mayo in Newbridge. Was there any sort of legacy there of discontent with Keane O'Neill and some of the older Kerry players?
Not that I was aware of, to be honest about it. Keane was a huge part of our success in 2014. When I took over, I felt we needed to go a different direction, strength and conditioning wise in particular, and Keane is an expert in that field. The fact that he's also a football coach was bonus, and he brought a lot in both fields. But, you know, with regard to the 2014 success, without his contribution in the S&C front, we wouldn't have won it. Mm. So, you know, he was a massive, massive part of our success. He's a fellow I got on very well with. And, you know, I think he's done a great job with Kildare. And I think he showed over the summer in particular when they reacted through the qualifiers what they're all about.
Yeah, definitely. Just one last thing on the selectors. Did you ever consider getting Donny Buckley back in?
Well, no, Donny, to be fair to him, had been involved before I went back in 2013. So I felt the fact that I was coming back, Dermot was coming back. We needed fresh voices as well that the players hadn't heard from before. And Donny then was involved very successfully with Mayo for, you know, the exact same length of time that I was involved with Kerry. So again, he's a fella I'd have massive respect for. It was actually me that said to Jack to bring him in first day, because I knew him through, he had done sessions with us with Field Rangers when I was playing county championship football with them, and I thought his sessions were incredible, so I thought he'd bring a good bit. So it didn't work out afterwards, but he's a fella I could see involved with Kerry again in the future for sure.
Yeah, sure, he's back in the market. It'll be interesting to see where he ends up. Just to round off then, I guess we've got to talk about the future, because it is a bright future. Kerry football, I'm sure you'll agree, is in a better place than the senior team then when he took over. It was in transition. That transition period, there's light at the end of the tunnel. You can see those boys becoming men.
Absolutely, it is. It is a very bright future for Kerry, and there's fantastic work being done at all levels, from development squads up, and there's an awful lot of great people involved all the way up along, and they're giving their time voluntarily. And, you know, I think that's one of the points of the Kerry job. That's a funny one that I often come across, the amount of people that think you're being paid anywhere between 50 and 100,000 euro a year. It's
you're well down the scale, like from what I've heard.
Yeah. Oh, have you heard more than that? I wish. The funny thing about it, people say, but you're being paid, and you say, you know, actually I'm not, I'm a volunteer, you're not paid for the Kerry manager's job. And it's always, how would you go away, you are being paid. And I think that probably comes from that there is a culture at club level, in particular in the GA, that any outside coach that comes in, they're being well paid. And, you know, that's a fact. That's not taking a leap of faith, that's a fact. And I think because of that, they're saying, well, if your man's getting paid whatever he's been paid for coaching a club, do you really mean to tell me the Kerry manager isn't being paid? But I'm not, and in fairness, most of the lads involved in the backroom team, they aren't either, and I think that's important, and it's something that means that Kerry can put their resources into the important things like developing players and facilities and so on. But no, as you said, the future is bright. I do think it is important, though, that when you know, a new manager is appointed, that he is given time and space, and I mean real time and space, in terms of it may take a couple of years to get over the line. It will happen. But it takes time. It'll take time for him to find his feet. We have some brilliant young players coming through, but it's a big step up. A lot of them made a big step this year. It's another step to go again and, you know, perform against Dublin and Croke Park, for argument's sake. So we need to be patient, and we need to really support the team and support the new manager, support his vision, get behind him, trust him, and trust that it'll come to fruition.
How good is this next generation of Kerry footballer?
There is a lot of very good players there, but I think I briefly mentioned this on Saturday night. I think as a county, we've probably oversold the minor success a small bit. The minor success is fantastic, and, you know, it's brilliant for those players to win minor All-Irelands, but it doesn't automatically transfer to senior success, and it doesn't automatically transfer from being a good minor to being a good senior. There's a lot of development to go on in the meantime. I won a minor All-Ireland myself in 94, and of that squad, I think there was only maybe four, five, I'm not sure off the top of my head, but that was the max of it that went on and won senior All-Irelands afterwards. So, you know, it takes time, but there are a lot of very good players, a lot of very good players coming through. They're great lads, they're very level-headed, they're ambitious, and they want to play for Kerry, and they will.
Yeah, there's some amount of names doing the rounds in terms of the potential next manager. I know between Lixna and Killarney and all that, you probably haven't had time to even reflect on your own time, let alone look ahead to who might replace you.
I leave that in Tim Murphy's capable hands now. But look, there's loads of great people in Kerry, and there's a lot of people who've experienced. There's a lot of people involved in the underage set up for the last number of years that know all these players as well. So there's a lot of very good people. And to be honest, I think, to be fair to Tim, the lads are going to take their time, make sure they get the right man. And we as a county then need to get behind that man.
Yeah, just to finish up then, in terms of the worldview of GAA in general, it's always good to get your thoughts on it before you went into to Kerry management. Your columns and stuff were always very interesting. Like, what is the single biggest thing that the GAA has to fix in terms of the games at an elite level and even at a grassroots level?
Yeah, for me, at the elite level anyway, I don't think it would work at the grassroots level, but at the elite level, I do think the game needs two referees. I think referees need help. The game has become so quick, and there's so much going on off the ball. And by the way, I'm not saying that we're whiter than white in that regard. We're not. You'll push the limits to whatever you have to do yourself. But I think we need a second referee. And I know the minute that's muted, the GAA say, oh, we've two linesmen on either side of him. But the linesman can give certain amount of help. But I think oftentimes what's forgotten is they're rivals of the referee, other than on match day. They want to be inside in the middle themselves.
Good point.
And, you know, if a fella's out in the middle of the field and he's making a bit of a hash of the game, it wouldn't be human for the two boys on the side to be saying, geez, I might have a better chance of getting a big game or an All-Ireland down the line. So I genuinely think that we need a second ref. I think we could embrace technology more, but that probably won't happen in my lifetime, but I think we could. And the other thing that I think the referees need a hand with is that I think they're behind the curve a bit in terms of the dark arts, as it's called. And if I was involved with the referees committee, what I'd love to see is two recently retired players or two recently retired managers, not myself, I'm definitely not putting myself forward for that job, in with the referees and advising them about what's going on, where the game is at. The reason I say two is that if it was, I don't know, someone, Derek McGrath, for example, that when Watford are being discussed, obviously he has to leave the room and the other manager or player is there to help the referees, to tell them what's going on and, look, we do this here, we do that there. And I just think you'll get to a better point in terms of really cleaning up the game and getting the decisions right, because I think there's too many games where there's big decisions got wrong and so many people put so much time into it at an amateur level. I think those decisions need to be got right, and I think if the referees got a bit of help, it would be a huge elimination of a lot of frustration for a lot of people.
Yeah, for all parties, really.
All
fans,
parties, everyone. Yeah, it's just fair. All you want is a level playing pitch. And listen, when I was in charge in 2014, we got breaks, but in other years, we certainly didn't get breaks. And, you know, the argument is, oh, it balances up over a season. It doesn't really. I would prefer if it was balanced full stop, and then no one can argue. There's no excuses afterwards, because it was a thing I always tried to avoid, because I think when you come out and if you say something about the ref, it's like sour grapes. But there are times, it's a fact that there are times referees get things wrong and it can cost you big. And I think if we eliminated that, it would be a huge thing for everyone, like you said, for all parties.
Yeah. Last question then. 6 years in the job, what's the lasting legacy of being Kerry manager on you?
On me, the way I look at it is I was hugely privileged. From my background, I come from Lixnaw. I come from a hurling area. We go to, from our side of the parish, we go over to Fenuig to play football because there isn't a football team in Lixnaw. For me to end up playing with Kerry was a massive achievement and something I really enjoyed. So to end up managing Kerry was something beyond my wildest dreams, something I would have never thought of. So I lived the dream. I'm quite secure with what we achieved while I was there. Would I have liked to have won more? Of course I would. But we had good days as well. I enjoyed it. I'm definitely leaving it, I hope, a better person, certainly a stronger person. And I wouldn't change any of it. I really, really enjoyed it. And it was an absolute privilege. And the next person that gets the job, they're in for some roller coaster ride, because there are highs, there's lows, but it's a fantastic experience, and it's something that I look back on and I cherish, and I'm delighted. And at the same time then, in my own life, I'm moving forward. You know, when we started in the job, there was only myself and Tina in our family. We've had a little girl since, Faye. Tina's expecting again in January. I've been promoted my job. I'm going to be a principal in September, which still seems very surreal to me. And there's loads of exciting things happening. So delighted with the time I was in charge, privileged to have been given an opportunity, and at the same time looking forward to my life ahead as well.
Well, you've left the job in a very good place. Congratulations and everything. And best of luck with the two big moments in your life coming up over the next 6 months or so. And the Amalfi Coast tomorrow, I understand?
That's it, Chad. That's it. A bit of sunshine and a bit of sleep as well will be required.
Well, well deserved. Thanks a million for your time. Much appreciated. And all the best in the future.
Thanks, Owen.
So, if you like this, you'll probably also like OTB AM, Ireland's only sports breakfast show. Subscribe to the OTB AM podcast stream or catch the show live on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook or offtheball.com every morning from 7:45 AM.